This is the Israel Connection on 88 FM and streaming over the internet at j-air.com.au. My name is David Schulberg, bringing you another episode of this weekly radio program that provides analysis and insight with important interviews and discussion about Israel. John Lockwood, the chairman of Australian pro-Israel Christian organisation Kingdom Builders, is partnering with Jewish community organisations and the global Israeli leadership. John founded the Southern Cross Alliance for Israel, which started 5 years ago in an effort to bring Jews and Christians together in support of Israel and to combat the scourge of anti-Semitism. John is also associated with Never Again Is Now, a Christian grassroots movement educating and mobilizing Christians to actively stand up against anti-Semitism. I'd like to welcome John Lockwood to the Israel Connection. It's good to have you on the show, John.
Nice to be with you, David.
John, you're the chairman of Southern Cross Alliance for Israel, SCAFI, as it's called, and Yes. You're a bunch of passionate Christian supporters of Israel. Tell us a little Yes. Bit about your organisation.
SCAFI, as we call it, Southern Cross Alliance for Israel, was born out of an event that happened back in 2017. A friend of mine, Peter Kentley, who's now deceased, had met with Rabbi Reisenberg from the Central Shul in Caulfield. They had decided that they would do an event together at the shul in Caulfield called Nations Blessing Israel. And they invited a few Christian speakers to come and meet with some of the members of the shul and to talk about why we support Israel. Well, it was a very successful event. After the event, the rabbi came to us and said, I think we should do a few more of these types of things. And so we did one or two other events after that, again, mainly based out of the shul. We got to meet all the congregation and speak with them. A number of Christian leaders came and spoke and said why they supported Israel. I suppose that went to 2018, 2019. We were doing these events and they were every few months. And then, of course, we hit 2020 and COVID, and the rabbi came to me and said, John, I think we should be doing a monthly event and let's do it on Zoom. So SCAFI was virtually started at the start of COVID, where we decided we had a committee of about seven or eight people who represented different organizations, Christians and Jewish organizations. We decided we'd do these monthly Zooms, which we've been doing now since, I think, 2019, late 2019, doing one a month for 12 months of the year over the last 5 years. And we've had some amazing Christian and Jewish speakers, Israelis, many who are on the ground in Israel, and those that support Israel as a nation and as a people. So we have quite a large audience. We usually get sort of around 60 to 80 on a Zoom evening, and then the recording goes out to a base of over 3,000. So the recordings go out and a lot of people watch the recordings as well. So that's how it started.
You've just done one, haven't you, just a few days ago, I understand.
We did one last week, yes. I'm also doing a Sunday afternoon one as well with our Kingdom Builders group.
Well, I know in March you had Uval Rotem, the former Israeli ambassador to Australia. That's one yes. I caught myself.
Okay, so we had Yuval, who is a personal friend of mine, and there's a story behind that, a big story. And we had Margaret Court from Victory Life Centre in Perth on that Zoom. We are very pleased to have Yuval as a friend, and he's been a friend since I first met him at the opening of Beersheba Park in 2008, I think the year was. I can tell you a longer story if you want, but you go ahead.
Now, let's get into the guts of what I want to talk about. You just mentioned your connection with an organisation called Kingdom Builders.
with
Yes.
Israel. Do you want to elucidate what that is all about?
Yeah, so Kingdom Builders was an organization that I started in as the founder in 2004. And basically I came out of the position of where I was running a what was called a coaching for results. So I was mentoring business people, particularly small business people in all sorts of fields. And in 2004, I had this inspiration to rename Coaching for Results to Kingdom Builders. And Kingdom Builders was based on the premise of helping business people to understand biblical principles and how to apply them into their business and indeed into their personal life. Now, what I had observed was there were a lot of Sunday Christians, as I would call them, who would sit and listen and hear all the sermons and then go back into the world on a Monday and do business the way the world does business. And that's not necessarily what I understood or what I've endeavoured to show and teach people is how we can do business using the Judeo-Christian morals, ethics, values as a base to all the ways that we do business. So that started in 2004. I've run Kingdom Builders ever since then, even when I moved to Tasmania in 2018-19. We run a weekly Zoom event for business people and small friends, if you like, who come along. And since October 7-8, we've been running a weekly meeting on Zoom as well with many similar guests that we have on SCAFI, but we're able to get into much deeper conversations with them. So that's how Kingdom Builders focuses and supports our Jewish friends and teaches, hopefully, a lot of our Christian friends about the ways that we can operate personally and business-wise.
Well, that's great to hear from you, John. We see many Christians, though, who are not on the same page as you, John, being associated with the pro-Palestinian movement. How would you gauge the relative strengths of these two distinct groups of Christians in our society?
Right. Yeah, so you're right, and unfortunately you're right, that you know there was a recent letter signed by, I believe, 100 pastors and heads of churches sent to the parliament that support Palestine and the recognition of Palestine and seeking peace. And, of course, we all want peace in the region and for the peoples. SCAFI, we have also in the process of writing and about to release a press release and a letter to all parliamentarians that is signed by 40 Christian organisations and individuals, leaders of churches and organisations like Bridges for Peace, ICEJ, C4I, and many others, etc., etc. And we are basically saying that we, as a group and as a body of Christians, represent some 300,000 to 400,000 Christians associated with us in Australia, and that we are not for, at this particular time, the recognition of Palestine as a state, particularly at this particular time where there's no outcome for what is going on over there. And we are reminding the government that we have a long associated history with the nation of Israel and support of Israel, going back to our Bathsheba roots and the times where the Australian Light Horse and New Zealand Light Horse set, in essence, Jerusalem free through Bathsheba. We've got, as I said, 40 organisations that will be sending out to their own databases as well as this media release. I find when I talk with a lot of Christians, particularly leaders in whether they be parliamentarians or church leaders, that there is a very little understanding of the history of Israel. And I would have put my hand up as a younger man before I first went to Israel in 2006-07. And I would have been in the same thing because we were never taught. We're never taught. It's not taught from the church pulpit, etc., our history and land and where Israel is. In fact, the church that I did attend during those early times would preach what they called replacement theology, that there is, that the church is actually Israel. There is no place called Israel, and there is no peoples that God has particularly blessed except for the church. Having no other knowledge, people fall into that belief system, if you like. As I said, until I went to Israel, started meeting the Jewish people, finding out about them, finding out about my own roots right back to Abraham, that I had to change how I thought, and then started to hopefully help others to understand both the history in the physical sense and, of course, with Christians in a spiritual sense as well, and why we are tied at the hip, or in inverted commas, that we are part of them and our role is to support them. That's been a 20-odd year re-education for me, and helping others to understand as well.
Well, that's a great job you're doing, and I'm hoping that people are listening to you a bit, John, with what you know and can tell. It's said that the reason that many evangelicals are so interested in the fate of Israel is that they believe that there will be a millennium in the future, a golden age where Christ reigns on earth, and they believe that before Christ will return, there will be a tribulation where Christ defeats evil. There will be natural disasters and wars and perhaps an antichrist, as the book of Revelations notes. Then at the end of that period, the people of the Mosaic covenant, including the Jews, will convert. Then after their conversion, the great millennium starts. And what about the people who don't convert? That's the question I'm coming to with you, John. According to the evangelicals who believe this, they'll end up with the rest of the unsaved, which means they'll be wiped out and sent to hell. Does this paint a picture which might lead some Jews to be somewhat skeptical about Christian Zionism?
Very good question. And to unpack that, I'm just going to go straight to the end and say, I personally and the people that I associate with and the organisations do not agree with the end of that statement, that the unsaved are sent to the pit of hell, etc. But I know that has been preached in churches. My God, the God that loves his people and loves his land and loves all those that love him, comes for us to be with him and to care for us. And whether there's a 1,000-year reign and all that sort of thing, I have learned to say, I cannot, as a human being, ever, if you like, consult of what God will do when he will do it. And I say to people, that perspective of the unsaved, particularly of his own people, is one that I could not go along with, because my God is a loving God and I know him as a loving God, and he wants everybody to be with him, if you like, upon, as we would say as Christians, Christ's return for the second time. And even our Jewish friends say, Yeshua, when Yeshua comes, is the time that they are waiting for the first time. We also say to our Jewish friends, we have a love for Hashem, for the Father of us all, and that's why we stand with you, and we need to be seen to be standing with you. One of the things I've discovered, certainly since October the 7th, there have always been in Australia, you know, groups of Christians who support Israel, Zionists, many different groups. Unfortunately, they weren't connected, inverted commas. They were doing their own thing. Like ICEJ does a wonderful job around the world with Christian embassies for Jerusalem, etc. But they weren't connected with Bridges for Peace or C4I. So SCAFI has played that role of partnering and bringing them together to do stuff together so that we are seen as a body of Christians supporting Israel, not just individual ministries or churches.
Yeah, I mean, this is a form of supremacy that I've just been telling you about, which of course nobody could really agree with is proper in any evaluation of the way the world should be.
Correct. Correct.
I mean, I was mentioning before different Christians. It caught my eye that there were two people who stood on the pulpit on Anzac Day in St. Paul's Cathedral who were speaking about the plight of the Palestinians in Gaza. Would you contend with the runners of that church that this is an improper practice?
I didn't catch who they were or what they were saying on the day. I mean,
one of them I know is a former Israeli IDF soldier, Nachson Amir, who has joined the pro-Palestinian movement, and he was standing there giving his story, and this is what they're putting out in a church which is probably one of the most dominant churches in Melbourne.
Yes. Let me put it this way. I would never support a position such as that. One of the things that we are trying to do at this particular time is to go to particularly the 100 people who wrote the letter to Parliament supporting the recognition of a state of Palestine right at the moment, which I believe is actually going as a form of a bill introduced on the 14th of May in the Senate by our Foreign Minister Wong. What we have said is, instead of trying to argue the point with them, we are going to send them tickets to the newly released film that will be launched on May the 10th, I think, by Hugh Kitson, called Whose Land?
Yes.
And I think if people can get to you, and it'll be in all the local theatres, and watch the whole story that many don't understand of the history of the land, not since 1948, but from way back until now, then it will give them a much better perspective of the current situation, which nobody has got the right answer for at this particular point of time. But I find that many of these church leaders don't understand history because we've never been taught it. I would be recommending to all those people, would you please go and watch Whose Land? And after that, if you'd like to have a discussion, I would be very happy to have that discussion with you as to whether your point of view or your understanding of the history may change your opinion.
Yes, I would hope that some of our main media like SBS or ABC would cotton on to a documentary like that and give it airtime. I spoke with a director a few weeks ago who produced a documentary about the Nova Music Festival massacre and appealed to the media to screen this as an extraordinary documentary. And it's important that people know and can see what has happened. The media don't address it.
Correct. You don't see these things on mainstream news media, unfortunately. And if you do, it's a very biased view most of the occasion. I think Sky News probably gives us a better hearing, at least, and they have regular Jewish guests on as well. But that would be the only media that I would know of, except for, of course, you know, the social media streams, of which there's such a mixture of both that it's hard to find your way through.
If you've just tuned into the Israel Connection, I'm speaking with John Lockwood, chair of the Southern Cross Alliance for Israel.
So I heard a sentiment mentioned at one of your Zoom events, or the one actually that was with Yuval Rotem, that Christians had been slow to muster support for Israel after October the 7th. I don't know whether you actually agree that that's the case. Of course, we see what's going on and it becomes more and more difficult for Israel to wage this war now. What initiatives have you been taking lately to address this deteriorating situation where support for Israel has been waning?
Again, this is very interesting, and I will just share with you that we have, since October the 7th, some of the things that we've been doing and will be announced in June that for the first time in the parliament, and there will be an Israel Allies Caucus that will be chaired by Andrew Wallace, the member for the Sunshine Coast, and there are 22 other members of parliament that will be joining in that caucus as an officially recognised body that support Israel. And they are mainly Liberal National Party, but there is one Labor Party, I think. And we're hoping to get a couple of other people as well, a couple of other Labor Party along that we're talking with. So that's one thing. So that will be supported by what we are, what SCAFI will probably morph into is an Israel Allies Foundation, Oceana, where we will unite with other nations about our support for Israel. Its main function will be education and sharing and standing against anti-Semitism in a public sense, if you like. That's the outcome of what we've been working on since October the 7th, as well as our few, we've had meetings with the group of 40, we've put a few letters together, we've done a couple of media releases, etc. And we've realised, of course, that as time has gone on, the battle to get the message across is getting harder and harder. Yeah, I've got some other points of view, but that's just to give you a little bit of what we've been doing since that time. And we have got a strong body of organisations now that are doing things together instead of individually.
Well, if you're seeking a Labor representative to join your caucus, I suggest that you should try approaching Josh Burns from the Labor Party and see if you have any luck with him.
Yes, he and Mick Kelly we're talking with, so yeah, and there's a South Australian fellow that we're talking with as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, when you say Mike Kelly, but Mike Kelly's not a current politician, though. He's an ex-politician.
Correct, but he'll be more for the foundation, if you like, part of the associates for the foundation, not in the caucus itself.
John, do you have views about the effectiveness of the Israeli government at the moment in dealing with the crisis that the country is facing? I want to know your views about the battle that Israel has with Hamas, trying to eliminate Hamas, in contrast with its attempts to release the hostages. How you can reconcile those two efforts?
Yeah, it's the most difficult subject of all, isn't it? Here's where I come to. I think all of Israel, including the IDF, you know, we're not expecting this huge planned attack. And the leadership, from my observation, had been more worried about how they seek peace with people by giving things away, by trade, by trying to build relationships, etc., and not kept their eye on, as they should have, of what was going on, as we now know, underground over there in Gaza. Of course, there are faults from a government level and from a military level. And as one of our regular guests on our Sunday afternoon is a good friend in Israel. He's a major of a reservist group of over 500 that he leads into strips of Gaza and all sorts of other things, etc. He was an ex-tour guide, but now has gone or is almost full-time back in the reserve army. His name is Daniel Jacobs, and he said he's amazed that there weren't more heads that should have rolled for the responsibility of turning the blind eye, if you like, or not being prepared for what was coming. But from my perspective also, I would be one that said that the right head was in the right place to lead the nation at that time. That would be my perspective. I know there are other Israelis who are now, thousands are protesting in Tel Aviv and other places about the government's lack of action into getting the hostages back in Rafah and other places, etc. when we have our meetings on a Sunday afternoon, we have a guest speaker and then we stay on for half an hour and we pray. And we pray for the leadership of Israel, that they will have the right strategy, that they will act quickly and that they will get the results and get the hostages back. But boy, I just say at the end of that, I said, and I'm thankful that that responsibility is not on my shoulders because I wouldn't know what to do.
It's extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah.
I want to get to an initiative that we haven't mentioned yet. This is the Never Again Is Now rallies that have been organised. Yep. We've saw one in New South Wales, I think it was a couple of months ago. What's being planned regarding these rallies?
So there was another one then about a month later in Adelaide. There are currently plans for Melbourne in the next couple of weeks, I think on May 14 or 15. There's a planned event. I haven't got all the details. There's also a planned event in Perth, which will be probably in early June. The leaders of this organisation, we are in contact with and liaise with and support where we can to get as many people to these rallies or events who are supporters of Israel, because I think it's important that our Jewish friends see that we will stand up even when it's not popular. And there may be opposition, as they had in Adelaide. They had a fair bit of opposition there. And I think it's also important that we liaise as a group and a body with our police forces, because we've seen some extraordinary things happen where the Palestinians have a right to protest or whatever. And if any Jewish person turns up, or in fact, that's how Never Again Is Now started, that I think after October 7 in the Sydney Opera House, there was a protest. And one of the guys that now leads the Never Again Now movement is Reverend Mark Leach. And he went down and held a Israeli flag as he watched the protest at Sydney Harbour. And within minutes, they were after him. And he was chased through the streets of Sydney. And he said, I was lucky to get away. They didn't catch me, because my fate, I wouldn't know if they did catch me. But he went to the police. The police virtually said to him, you should not have gone. You should not be there. We've seen in subsequent protests, etc., where the police will go in and arrest or remove Jewish people, but do nothing to stop the violent side of the protests. Mark, together with a group of others, started this Never Again Is Now, which we support in essence, and so do a number of other cultures. So this is just not Christians or right-wing Liberal National Party people. This is across the board. These are representatives of Indigenous leaders. At the Sydney one, we had, I think, or Jackie Lambie and party were speaking. Yes, there were some Christian leaders as well speaking, but it's an across-the-board, not a white right-wing movement. This is a movement that is saying we need to come back to a culture that is based on fair go, freedom of speech, loving your neighbour, and understanding that the rise of anti-Semitism affects us all in this country. And we have to educate our own children and our own grandchildren.
Now, there are a couple of ignominious Jews, I won't name, who are associated with what I have referred to in the past as a pompous, presumptuous and contemptuous Jewish Council of Australia, who wrote in Crikey, and I shared that article with you, and I might share it with my listeners as well. They said, far from fighting racism, groups like the Never Again Is Now movement intentionally conflate anti-Semitism with legitimate criticism of Israel in ways that contribute to rising hatred. Now, how do you respond to this kind of criticism where they're saying that it's reasonable to criticise Israel and the way Israel is behaving is actually increasing anti-Semitism, blaming the victim in a sense.
Yeah. I shake my head and say that's a very skewed point of view from my perspective and any understanding I would have. I think the one thing that Israel has, and it's different than any other country in the Middle East, is it always it's encouraged people to say, hey, we don't agree with you on this matter or that matter or whatever, but you're entitled to say so. That view, and I've heard it from the United States, I think there's another group over there that I've come into contact with. It's a skewed, I call left, woke agenda that comes to these inverted commas conclusions about white colonial supremacists or whatever other banner they want to place upon you to shame you. I don't understand it. I don't understand why the Jewish people would be so critical, if you like, of their own leadership or their own country that represents them. It's a mystery, that one, for me.
Yeah, it's very difficult on our side too. You want to be a united community that's dealing with this serious situation that's going on, and we're seeing these little splinter groups popping up with very, very small numbers, but the media gives them a voice.
Yes, and that's you know, as we see, the media will give them a voice where the voice of the majority of Jewish organisations and indeed people like us in the Christian world, we get no coverage in media or very little.
Yeah, I squeezed in a comment on the ABC this morning. I was actually listening to the ABC. They were talking about protests at this HTA metal plant in Campbellfield that apparently has connections with the manufacturing of materials that are used in F-35 aircraft that Israel is using in Gaza. I managed to get on and point out that this kind of harassment and intimidation, which the police are not doing anything about, is very widespread, and pointed out that it's happening on our universities as well, where students are so harassed and intimidated that Jewish students in particular are not going to classes. And we know in the US, they're basically telling these students, well, you'll just have to do your courses and classes on Zoom because we can't guarantee your safety. That's what we've come to.
Yes, it's a horrifying thing, and as you probably know, I think on Friday one of the universities is closing down for the day in protest, standing for the Palestinians. So no classes, but you can all come and stand with the Palestinians.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you, John. I think we're on the same page. There's no question about that in terms of what are dealing with at the present time, very difficult circumstances, and I appreciate the support that you're giving our community and Israel.
Well, it's been good to be with you, David. Thank you. Thank you for the good work you're doing. For all our Jewish friends out there, just know that we are with you, not just in spirit, but also physically. We're there with you and we'll stand with you. So that's the message that I would like to give as we conclude across the nation, that we will stand with you wherever and whenever you need it. And whether we be in the depths of where I am in the southern tip of Tasmania through to the west and the north and the east, then there will be people who will stand with you.
You've been listening to an interview with John Lockwood, the chairman of an Australian pro-Israel Christian organisation called Kingdom Builders, which is partnering with Jewish community organisations and the global Israeli leadership. I would like to thank Eitan Drori from the global Israeli leadership for helping to organise the interview with John Lockwood. The Australian Academic Alliance Against Anti-Semitism, comprising a network of 250 academics working across 26 Australian universities and medical centres from diverse disciplinary backgrounds, cultural identities and religious affiliations, aims to counteract anti-Semitism in the tertiary sector and medical and research affiliates through education and advocacy. I spoke with Professor Stephen Proer, who is a professor of physics at the University of Melbourne and a co-chair of the Alliance.
I'd like to welcome Professor Stephen Proer to the Israel Connection on JA Community Radio. Nice to have you, Stephen.
Thanks for having me.
In response to October 7 and the rise in anti-Semitic incidences on campus and against the Israeli Academy, the Australian Academic Alliance Against Anti-Semitism was formed, and you are a co-convener of that organisation. You recall that October 7th was your Herzl moment, as I've seen it written. What do you mean by that, Stephen?
What I meant was that Herzl records that he was listening to the crowd shouting, "Down with the Jews," when Dreyfus was being accused of being a traitor. He realized at that point that Jews had to take their own future into their own hands, because anti-Semitism was so embedded in the society, and started the Zionist movement to create a homeland for Jewish people in Israel. What I meant was, I was shocked after October 7 that on October 8, that rather than people identifying with the pain of Israel losing so many people, they were there protesting against Israel. And this was before Israel had done anything in Gaza of any significance. They were there shouting, "Down with the Jews," or "Where are the Jews?" or "Gas the Jews." It was my Herzl moment when I realized that anti-Semitism is a light sleeper, to quote someone who I don't remember their name, but it's a wonderful quote. There is an undercurrent of anti-Semitism that has been growing. I can only explain this explosion of anger against Israel following October 7, where the natural response was to be sympathetic to the Jewish people and the Israeli people, as being due to an undercurrent of anti-Semitism that the Jews are finally getting what they deserve.
Now, your group, I understand, has over 260 members spread across 26 universities in Australia. It's not just composed of Jews. I believe you've got people from many different cultural backgrounds. Do you want to give us an idea of the nature of your organisation and how it's shaping to do its work?
Yeah, it's entirely a grassroots organisation. After October 7th, we did a sort of gap analysis. We said, what are our community organisations well prepared to do and what are they not prepared to do? What does Orgis do, etc.? And we came to the conclusion there was very much a need to support especially Jewish students on campus who are experiencing anti-Semitism and virulent anti-Zionism, if you like, or anti-Israel sentiment in the classroom and in the lecture theatre. And there the power imbalance between lecturers and academics and students is very profound. And we felt that there was a need to support the students. We felt that Orgis and other organisations did a really good job of fighting the good fight on the campus lawns. But when it came to what was happening inside the university, inside the academy, then we thought that our role as academics was actually going to be very helpful to the students. And it's proven to be the case, because when students are confronted with lecturers who are anti-Semitic or unfairly anti-Israel, they are they feel very powerless. And I can give you examples of that. And we're there to help them in the first instance. And then it grew and morphed into wanting to protect students on campus. We want peace on campus. We don't want campus to be a battleground. You can't learn if you're feeling threatened. Our call is for the university should be free of these violent anti-Semitic protests. And then it also morphed into things like trying to protect Israeli visitors who come here, who want to speak, who are often invited by the universities. And there have been some terrible examples of universities not doing their job of protecting the freedom of speech of those Israeli academics. And in many instances, those academics are not here to talk about anything to do with the conflict. They're being cancelled only because they come from Israel, which is completely outrageous, and we are not prepared to take that lying down. And they're being cancelled on the university campuses, because the university administrations were often too scared to take a stand to protect those visitors from unfair vilification and from unfair attacks. This then leaks to conferences and other public forum, and it's very important to us that Israeli academics have the right to visit here and to participate fully in the academic life.
Yeah, we'll go into some specific details of some of the incidents that you've mentioned, Stephen. You're conducting some kind of a survey to identify the extent of anti-Semitism on campuses. What is your aim here to achieve?
Our aim is to collect data about the experiences of Jewish academics and Jewish students on campus. And here is something that I feel very strongly about, is that Jews are not afforded the same consideration as other groups are with regard to the criticism that's leveled against Israel. You can't say anything on campus with regard to people's religious background or their sexual background or whatever, but you can, and you have to be very cognizant of people's feelings. But people seem to be blind to the fact that when you accuse Israel of genocide, the Jewish community feels that as a personal affront. It seems like campuses are tone deaf to that sort of sensitivity. So, for example, in a class, you might want to be talking about, say, men's rights in the legal system. You have to be super sensitive to the fact that there might be a woman in the class who's been subject to domestic violence or other. And so you're super sensitive to that, but you're not super sensitive to the fact that if you say, oh, please go to the protest about Israel's genocide in Gaza with my blessing, you're not sensitive to the fact that there are Jews in the class that hear Israel's genocide in Gaza and take that extremely personally, as we all do as Jews who support Israel's right to exist.
Yeah, with our experience of the Holocaust, we know what genocide really is, and this banding around of the word in the context of what's going on university campuses is really wrong.
It is wrong. And people say, oh, we have our freedom of speech. Yes, you have the freedom of speech, but for every other minority group, and let's face it, Jews are a very small minority in Australia. For every other minority group, you're supposed to be sensitive to not what you say, but how those people receive what you say. And it astounds me that people in the academy do not recognize the hurtful nature of these throwaway lines about genocide in Gaza. It's also intellectually dishonest. Genocide in Gaza is at best a contested notion. Israel has defended itself vigorously in the court. The courts have not found anything yet with regard to... So accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza is factually incorrect, as well as being insulting. And it's not... This is very deliberate. This idea of accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza is a deliberate attempt to raise the issue of Israel's right to exist with regard to the Holocaust. The narrative goes like this. Well, in 1948, the world thought Jews have been subject to genocide. Let's give them a state as somewhat of compensation. But look what the Jews did with that state. They turned it into a state that commits genocide. So the legitimacy of the state is brought into question. It's a very insidious campaign. It's been very successful. And it's been in operation for 30 years, and I'm afraid that we've been a bit asleep at the wheel while these sorts of influences have been taking root. And you can see how fertile the ground is by just how easy it has been to get young people, particularly young people on the left, to come out in droves opposing Israel's right to protect itself and to try to remove the Hamas threat.
Yeah, just on that remark about genocide, the media is very complicit, of course, in this. Wherever anybody rings up to talk about the supposed genocide, there's never any questioning of these assertions. It's taken as being a statement of fact. that that's what Israel is committing.
We all decry the suffering of the Palestinian people in Gaza. My personal view, it's not a 5A position, but my personal view is that after the war, after World War II, the fact that Germany and Japan had to surrender completely was the precursor to those countries becoming very successful countries today. And the same, this is my personal view, again, not 5A, my personal view is that the defeat of Hamas could usher in a new era of prosperity for the Palestinians, just like the complete defeat of the German military and the Japanese military ushered in new areas of prosperity for those countries. But that, again, is my personal view, not a view of 5A.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that myself either. I understand that on campus there is now a network of Alliance academic advisors across Australian universities whose roles are to advocate for zero tolerance of anti-Semitism and to support Jewish students and staff. How is this working, Stephen?
It's quite, again, grassroots. We realise that although we could have a national organisation, students want to talk to someone locally. On every campus where we have a critical mass of Jewish students and Jewish staff, you have a small group of people that have volunteered to help students who have been suffering from the trauma of being of anti-Semitism on campus. That small group, what we do in order not to get doxed, is that students report an incident to us on our website. They reach out for help. We then redirect them to the people on the campus who can speak to them. It is really important that students speak to experienced academics who understand the system, who can also help students with strategies to help them cope with the situation. It's not just a matter of us going to the administration and saying to them, stop it. It's also a case that students can be empowered. And sometimes all that's required is to have a bit of a debrief with the student, ask them what their strategies are. It could be changing tutorial groups. It could be defending the students against the fear that they will be marked down by insisting on a second examiner. All the sorts of things that academics who are on the ground can actually help students to do. Most of our members are very diverse, but nearly all of us view our first priority as being able to support students who are subject to anti-Semitic incidences on campus.
I want to go to a specific example of this express denial of any guarantee of cultural safety for anyone espousing a Zionist ideology. We've seen this in the case of pro-Palestinian activists coming into classes at the university, photographing students after they've been asked to show whether they support Hamas or what's going on in Gaza. What do you say about these intrusions, which are obviously extremely intimidating?
Look, universities are in fact somewhat between a rock and a hard place. If you look at what's happened in Columbia, strong arm tactics of demanding that students leave the premises and arresting them seems to have somewhat backfired. In the context of Australian universities, I think that vice chancellors in general have been trying to keep the peace, not take sides. They're certainly not showing the moral courage of trying to decide between right and wrong, but you have to understand it from their perspective. They want peace on campus. But what they're not doing is they're not fulfilling their obligations under statutory obligations to ensure a safe workplace for everybody. And what they're not doing is they're not disciplining the students who are guilty of these intimidations. And the universities have very powerful levers. And the most powerful lever is to bring students up under disciplinary actions and in principle to withhold their degree or cancel their enrolment. These are very powerful deterrents. And to date, there have been very few prosecutions of students who have done things that are clearly against university policies. That instance that you referred to is a good example of the students clearly broke the rules, no question. And universities, instead of taking those students through disciplinary actions and then announcing to everybody what happened to those students, if there has been disciplinary action, that disciplinary action has been kept very quiet. I think the universities need to take a measured role. I'm not suggesting that they need to bring the police onto campus necessarily. I'm not even suggesting that university security officers move people on, because we don't want to have physical altercations on campus. What I am saying is that when students break the rules, they should pay the price and they should be prosecuted to the full extent that universities have, which has a very powerful message. And if there are people on campus who are protesting who are not members of the academy, staff or students on the campus, they should be removed for trespass. There's no reason that we should have our universities turn into the battlegrounds that they're becoming at the moment. That's one aspect. The other aspect is what non-Jewish academics are doing on campus. They're egging on the students, and they are insensitive at best and antagonistic at worst towards Jewish students. And seems to be an assumption, yes, if you're Jewish, it's fair enough, but if you are Zionist, well, you're not entitled to be in my class. You're not entitled to safety in my class. And this is very, very problematic.
Now, you referred to statutory regulations on the university campuses. I want to bring up the IHRA working definition of anti-Semitism, which has been adopted by many tertiary institutions. Tell me, Stephen, is this worth a cracker?
Well, I'll give you some of the history. Is that about 2.5 years ago, the Union of Students at Melbourne University passed an anti-Israel motion. This was a remarkable thing because the only time that the student union had ever issued any sort of statement about international affairs was about Israel in 10 years worth of history that I could go back. A student then challenged that because the statement basically said, well, Judaism isn't Zionism, and it was basically cultural appropriation of the worst variety. It was basically telling Jews what they were allowed to believe and what they were not allowed to believe. And the implication was very clear. If you're a good Jew, you can't be a Zionist. The university responded to that by adopting the IHRA resolution and using that to then deem that this statement by the students was anti-Semitic. Then subsequently, the students withdrew the motion. They then put it back in. They then passed the motion again, and it took a case in the court to force the students out of this mindset to actually force them to take down the statement finally, which they did after a court settlement a few weeks ago. Yes, is it worth a cracker? Yes, it is worth it. It is worth it because it puts some clarity around what's the difference between being opposing Israel and opposing Israel's actions and opposing its right to exist. And if people ask me about this differentiation, it's very simple. Jews just want to be treated like everybody else. At the height of the atrocities being created all over the world, no one suggested that the states that were committing those atrocities should lose their right to exist, whether it be Iraq or Iran or Syria or Sudan or whatever. All those countries who were committing, or even Russia, no one ever suggests that just because those countries are doing horrible things that they have no right to exist. It's only Israel, of all the countries in the realm, that basically the actions of the Israeli government undermine the right of that country to exist, its legitimacy to exist. That, I think, is anti-Semitic because, according to the IHRA, Israel is singled out to a standard that is not required of any other state.
Yes, exactly.
And on campus, when people say that Israel is guilty of apartheid and genocide, etc., it's just taken as a given, not as a discussion point. This, once again, is anti-Semitic because it presupposes that Jews don't have the right to their own state and their own protection, etc. And the calls for intifada and the calls from the river to the sea, however much the people that wear those T-shirts and that walk around claiming those things say we're not anti-Semitic, Jews treat that as a threat. And what I can't understand is why people are so blind to this, that in every other group is entitled to say, what you're saying threatens me, and we're supposed to take that seriously. But when Jews say your call for from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, Jews' sensitivity to that is just disregarded and put into the white privilege or whatever. And that's when you know that anti-Semitism is actually operational, when you see Jews being not given the same treatment as everybody else. For some people, Jews are too white. It doesn't matter what Jews do. We are really seeing an undercurrent of anti-Jewish feeling on campus. It seems that especially Jews, which express power, agency, etc., is particularly galling to some aspects of the academy. Now, having said this all, Jabed, I hasten to add that this isn't the majority. For the most part, and in most faculties, my colleagues have been nothing but supportive. I got a call a few weeks ago from the Deputy Vice Chancellor who asked me, am I okay? Which was very much appreciated. Many of our 5A members are also outraged by the anti-Israel rhetoric, which has reached crescendo on campus unfairly, and it just doesn't justify it. Most people on campus are appreciative of this, and most people on campus actually support Israel, particularly in medicine, in science, and in engineering. There's very strong support for the Israeli Academy. There's recognition of the wonderful things Israel has been doing in medicine and in technology and in entrepreneurship and a desire to collaborate. So it's not all bad, right? It's basically just creating a set of rules on campus where everybody can live in peace and not harmony, but at least rules of engagement that say you can protest, but you can't invade buildings. You can't stop people talking to each other. You can't exercise your freedom of speech, which means silencing my freedom of speech. So I call on the universities to just enforce their own rules, the rules of freedom of expression and a safe environment, and to contain the protests to appropriate spaces on campus so that, yes, you can make a lot of noise in a particular area, but that's the limit of what you're allowed to do on campus. I don't think these are unreasonable expectations.
No, certainly not.
We are not, 5A is not prepared to let the campus be a no-go zone for Jews. Bottom line, and we'll fight with all the legal means that we can and all the advocacy that we can make in order to ensure that Jews are welcome on campus and feel safe to study and to do research and to engage in the intellectual life of the university. Universities are there for everybody, including Jews, not excluding them.
You've been listening to an abbreviated version of an interview with Professor Stephen Prower, a professor of physics at Melbourne University, who was a co-convener of the Australian Academic Alliance Against Anti-Semitism. The full interview with Professor Prower will be made available as a separate podcast. Until next week, it's goodbye from the Israel Connection.